Are you hungry for more? You know what life has to offer. You sense it is radiating magic, but perhaps you feel like you're just not fully nourished by all there is to embody. Welp, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. Here and now. Just what the doctor ordered. Welcome to the conversation, Well and Why, where we feast on fuel for the soul. These topics are designed to ignite that fire and maximize our human potential. Together, we can heal the system. Alone, we can heal our bloodline. Bon appetit! Welcome back to Well and Why, a spiritually nutritious production. I'm your host, Allie, and this week's episode is with Steven from Greenpoint Innovations. This company is so cool. We talk about all things regarding the environmental climate space. We discuss the natural progression of the environmental industry, how to play our part with little steps towards having a smaller carbon footprint, sustainable forestry, and did you know New York City's waste management goals for 2030? Because we discussed that. So tune in, let me know what you think. I really wanted to have Steven on here because he has a major amount of knowledge regarding the environment and what we're doing to it, how people are helping it. And it's really amazing to hear because I know that a lot of us are really scared and we just don't even know where to start. So we discuss that and we discuss so many more things that he's aware of. But how I feel this really fits into the Well and Why umbrella is because spirituality is everything, right? But we have physical wellness, emotional wellness, spiritual wellness. And what I feel like we're not really discussing in the wellness industry or realm or department, whatever you want to call it, is environmental wellness. And that's not just to say nature and how nature's doing, but us and how we're doing because of the nature. But we are a huge component of what is going on with the environment. So the decisions we make, I find to also benefit my individual wellness in a pretty real way. For instance, when I go to a store and I already have a bag with me, the difference in how I feel when I leave the store with my own bag versus being like, oh shit, I need a bag, you know? Like, I just feel so crappy when I need to use a plastic bag. And then I get back and I unpack my stuff and I'm just like, what the hell do I, now I, you know, at least it comes in handy to reuse those bags for the garbage can in my bedroom or the bathroom, for example. But I really wish I didn't have to. I wish that plastic bags didn't even exist. How did we get ourselves here? Anyway, I can go down the spiral forever. So, without further ado, Steven. Enjoy, guys.
Steven, you and I met back in my old job managing a building for a co-working space, and ever since I left, we've been talking about you coming on here. Thank you so much for making it happen and for being here with me on Well and Why to talk about environmental wellness regarding what's happening in today's society and where we're at from your standpoint as somebody in the industry.
My pleasure, Allie. It's always good to talk to you, and thank you very much for having me on.
Oh my gosh, yes, I'm so excited for this. So I would love if you could start with a brief summary about who you are and what you do.
Absolutely, yeah, sure. I think I'm one of these people that's just sort of been motivated personally on the environmental, I didn't think it was possible, you know, when I was a kid and going into high school and then college, and I studied business, and then, but I really lucked out, and soon after I got out of college, I found myself working in a startup around forestry carbon offsets and renewable energy, and then that led into a series of really incredible positions at organizations that opened me up to the world of sustainable finance and carbon markets, to corporate sustainability and responsible investing. And has since, you know, in the last 5.5 years or so, has kind of taken me around the world to different places that are tropical forest countries, to degraded landscapes, to of course the conference room here and there, where you're at an event and sitting on a podium or in an audience, and the diversity of that is just really exciting, and it's really incredible to have had those opportunities.
Yeah, that's amazing. So the way you realized that you could enter that in the field as your job was just landing in a job itself in the industry?
A little bit more deliberate in a way, the really short version of how I got working in the environmental climate space is, out of college, I quickly decided that going into a job that had been prepared for through my studies, didn't seem right. And I actually made a deal with the folks at home that I was staying with. They said, well, if you're going to stay here, you have to figure out a way to make a little bit of money while you're at home. But also, it's really important you figure out what you want to do and how you can do it. So that really led me to getting a part-time job and going to the library and really just reading anything I can get my hand on that appealed to me, and I would dig. And then, really amazing thing that my dad did for me was he would have me about once a week put the phone on speakerphone back with him at the house and make cold calls to organizations and people, and whether professors or people at a business, to find out how they got working in the environment and ask them questions about what they do and try to relate it back to where I was interested in. And then that led me to essentially printing off 10 resumes and going into New York City on a train, and had no idea if I even had any interviews, but I knocked on doors and eventually got an interview with an organization that gave me an internship. and I went in every day until they started paying me.
Wow. That's so neat. So you have a really great support system, and that's such an awesome old school story. I mean, who's knocking on doors anymore? I love that. I love that.
Yeah. I think it's just, if anybody ever wants something, of course there are barriers and there's challenges of getting to the end goal, but I think it's just something we all can aspire to do and continue to aspire to do in our careers, set goals, and whether or not you even know how to get there, or if there is a there to get to, that at least you're kind of working towards that end result.
Yeah, I think that's the hard part. We all get a little lost with not having a specific vision, but at least knowing an industry or a direction or how we want to feel from what we do. So that's really neat.
Yeah, yeah. I think the unique thing today is, and I'm not that old, but it kind of is a reflection of just how quickly this space of climate, environmental, let's just say working to achieve various sustainability initiatives and goals, that whole industry, if you would call it that, it's really kind of developed only in the last 10 or 15 years. When I was looking at jobs early on, it was for health, safety, and environment positions. There was no term, sustainability. There were no chief sustainability officers, and people barely knew how to calculate a greenhouse gas emission. And so it's just changed so remarkably, where not only is there that level of sophistication and all the kind of private sector and, but that there are so many opportunities to get involved. You don't have to be a policy wonk, or you don't have to work, kind of doing environmental sciences. You can actually be a graphic designer. You could be an app developer. You could be an investor, and still be able to put your personal motives around kind of caring for the climate, caring for the environment, caring for the planet. You can inject that into what you're good at in a way today that you never really could when I was first starting off.
Yeah, that's a really great point. I love that, because we don't realize that we could take whatever skills we do have and enter whatever industry we want with that skill and then figure it out later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Awesome. So what is your company now and what are you doing with it?
Yeah. So about 5.5 years ago, started up a company called Greenpoint Innovations. And the idea all along has been that I kind of needed a platform to test out different ideas and build some partnerships and collaborations and work with as many interesting people as I possibly could. And so what that's the rabbit hole that's led Greenpoint Innovations down has been a variety of different projects, whether it is on the technical side of helping organizations or companies on understanding their environmental or sustainability, you know, footprint, as well as their objectives and goals and things like that. But that's really a small part of the history of Greenpoint Innovations, and really more, it's been trying to see how we can use technology and the arts to achieve climate and sustainability goals. So that's an intersection that, yeah, sure, there's others working on it, and you know, more so today than there were 5.5 years ago. But what's kind of been exciting is that it's brought me and, you know, various other people, you know, on the team to places that never could have dreamed of going before, you know, degraded landscapes in Ghana and Panama, as well as tropical areas in both Panama and Brazil, and working with indigenous people and not-for-profits, you know, government organizations that are funding us, like USAID, and we've worked very closely with Yawanawa, an indigenous organization in the state of Acre in Brazil. And with all those projects, we've been able to do really cool things, like use drones to map out landscapes, and that mapping work would be then brought into computer systems, GIS, where they could use that to understand more about that landscape than they could have with satellite imagery that maybe wasn't as high of resolution. And the other part of that work has been to create stories, you know, do films and documentaries, style films around that really beautiful harmony of where people, planet, and nature kind of come together, and how there really are opportunities that we can try to solve this climate crisis. So I think the biggest point of it all, though, is that we can think about not just the doom and gloom and all the negative, which, you know, it's bad. You know, the climate is in a really, really tough state right now, and the planet is hurting all around the world. But what's really exciting is there's a lot of really great innovation and people working to solve the problem. So it's not all bad, and it's worth focusing on the good things as well. So I guess in addition to those international projects, the flip side has been working locally in communities, and here in North Brooklyn doing projects that are really, really fun and creative. Admittedly, a lot of that creativity comes from the people that we end up working with. And that's been to do really cool street art activations and sort of clean tech projects that are engaging locally with North Brooklyn around climate and sustainability to help contextualize what climate change means at the local level. So these projects are really bringing together different types of partners, really unorthodox type of interactions that we're trying to facilitate with companies and political figures and other types of organizations from civil society, so that people can see how they're connected and try to, you know, find opportunities for deeper engagement.
Wow. You've got a lot going on.
Yeah, it's a fun process, and there's a lot going on.
Yeah, that's amazing, and I feel like the beauty and the curse is that, I mean, you'll never get bored. But how, I mean, do you ever get overwhelmed by all the projects?
Well, they're not all coming at the same time, you know, and so this is 5.5 years of working with these different types of projects and organizations, so. So, yeah, I mean, of course, you know, what's overwhelming is not just the issues that we're working on, but it's that there really are so many opportunities for doing work and sort of growing the business while also, you know, making sure that we're staying focused, is really important. So yeah, it takes a lot of time to really bring some order to it all. But, you know, what's really fun for me is, you know, outside of my work with Greenpoint Innovations, I work very closely with an organization in DC, Forest Trends, which is my work there is very much focused on environmental markets and working on sustainable commodity supply chains. And so these are, it sounds like a lot, but it's all very interconnected when we're dealing with the topics. And then the topics then have different pathways out, whether you're creating publications or you're doing a street art project. It's all connected at the end of the day, which makes it easier.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that kind of leads me into this question, is that I feel like here in New York City, especially, we see all the trash on the streets on a regular basis, and it can be quite nerve-wracking and even scary that it's not actually being taken care of properly. So my question is, how do you stay grounded and healthy since you've made your mission to care and change our planet's well-being whilst noticing that most people have lost touch with their emotional connection to nature?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, having the, I call it a privilege to travel and, you know, do that traveling majority of the time is for work, you know, very little is for pleasure, unfortunately, but, it's everything's relative, you know, of course, you know, people may look at trash and on the streets and think that we've lost touch completely, but I think it's there, you know, it's there inside of everyone. We're all human in a way. We're all connected in a way with nature, but we may not be in touch with it. And it's may not be an opportunity for everybody or most people in their lifetime who live in an urban environment to have a deep connection to nature. But what I think is important is that we understand our role in the order of nature. And even if we are in a city, what we tried to do in this recent project last month with the Newtown Creek Alliance and Broadway Stages, Global Landscapes Forum, and a number of other kind of local and global organizations was to show how in a big city like New York that we actually have opportunities to invest into our ecosystems. And that investment can come at the benefit of not just cleaning up the planet for the sake of cleaning up the planet, but it actually makes our communities more enjoyable to live in. And that project was along the Newtown Creek, which separates Greenpoint and, you know, really Brooklyn from Queens. It's a 3.5 mile, you know, body of water. It's an estuary that leads into East River. And there's a huge amount of work going on to clean that up. But people don't really see that on a day to day. And so I think rather than getting frustrated by the fact that it's mostly commercial property over there, but rather than getting frustrated that nobody's paying attention, let's do something to help people pay attention. And so what we did was we put together this really great mural concept, which was also in tandem with a boat viewing party of the mural, because you can really only see it from the creek. It's about 120 feet wide by maybe 15, 16 feet tall. It was painted by Brooklyn-based artists Lexi Bella and Danielle Mastrion. And they really painted the beauty of that ecosystem. They painted these birds, they painted jellyfish, they painted the flowers from the rooftop garden and grasses that you would typically see in that ecosystem and make it a destination. So with street art, people are excited by that and they really appreciate murals and art in general. It can really transcend any kind of demographic barrier that we might, you know, think exists. And people are drawn to it. And so because of this mural, we're hoping that it will bring attention to people that are living in an urban environment like New York City to see that there's this beautiful ecosystem that could be if the investment was made to clean it up and to support the organizations that are working in that. So the opportunities are there. It's about kind of finding ways to create more of them and to show how we can invest in nature to help solve the climate problem.
That's awesome. Where is that mural located?
That is on the waterfront over by this really beautiful rooftop wildflower garden called Kingsland Wildflowers. And the building is owned and the wall is hosted by Broadway Stages. So it's 520 Kingsland Avenue.
Awesome. I'm going to have to go take a look. And how would you say that somebody like myself, who's not in your industry, could potentially help?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to help us or to help the...
Yeah, I mean, just help in general and play our part in whatever size way that we can.
Sure, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of little things that people can do, and some of them are just about creating new habits, and some of them are a little bit bigger and require, some time to spend to kind of learn new things, and that's okay too. And it doesn't mean that everybody has to go full force in and become, you know, completely off the grid electricity wise and you know, remove all kinds of, you know, packaging and things from what they buy. But there's an opportunity for everyone, depending on, you know, what they have time for, what they have capacity for, and that it eventually will grow. You know, it's just a starting point like everything else. So I would say, you know, some really simple things that most people have already done and that we can continue to do is take advantage of, those giveaway programs or discount programs from utilities like Con Ed, where they're providing low energy consumption light bulbs for our homes. Take advantage of that and put those in. You'll save money on the electricity bill. And then there's obviously the stuff you could do with, you know, your own heating and air conditioning, you know, in summer months. But aside from that, there's a value in the whole, when you think about where things come from and where things then go, it's that everything that is around us comes from somewhere and is made from something. So if we wanted to start thinking about where those things are coming from, you know, for example, the desk, the wood in my desk, where did that wood come from? And was that from a virgin, completely pristine natural rainforest, or was it from a sustainably managed forest that is certified by the Forest Stewardship Council? Well, I would prefer and hope that it's the second option there, because, you know, that's what that industry is all about, is about making sure we don't have to dip into those natural rainforests in order to get, you know, the wood and the pulp and paper products that end up in our lives. But there's so much more than that. There's the, you know, the leather in our handbags. You know, of course, leather, if it's real, it's coming from an animal. And set aside the human to animal connection, but think about what we need in order for that animal to live and to be then available to us for the leather. That's, they need feed. So whether that might be soy or some other type of feed that would come from somewhere else. But they also need water. They need, you know, other types of inputs. And most importantly, they need land, you know, to grow on. So, you know, cattle is one of the biggest, if not the biggest driver of deforestation in tropical landscapes. And it's a huge contributor to greenhouse gas emissions. And so these issues are kind of intertangled. There's the animal rights issue in addition to climate. And then there's also social issues that are all connected. So we can start to ask these questions about where things are coming from and how much we can make changes to how we buy on a daily basis so that, you know, these are the things that we do have in our lives, that we wear, that we have in our homes, in our offices, you know, all those things, we have a better sense of their origin and are able to, within our financial means, to make, you know, better decisions.
Yeah, that's really well said. Thank you. Because sometimes we don't realize how connected everything is. And it's so true. And it makes you feel so much better when you even start thinking about those things. And then you start like today I ate all vegan or whatever, you know what I mean? It was like, that felt great. And I know that I'm helping this, which is helping this, which is in turn, you know, like little things. And I don't know, I just think it does feel really overwhelming sometimes to think of how can I help, but really just making those little decisions on a daily basis. And it's nice to hear from somebody like you who's like doing it all in a larger way to just be like, just change out your light bulbs, start there. So that's great advice. Thank you.
Yeah, no, for sure. And sometimes it's not like, you know, you may start with a motivation around cleaning up the environment, but then quickly it turns into something else that's even maybe more appealing. And that's what helps you continue to do it. So the example for that would be, you know, composting. So why do I continue to compost? I would say initially it started because I was trying to reduce the amount of unnecessary waste that went into the waste stream that ended up in landfills and didn't need to be there because it's organic matter that can be broken down in a compost facility and then be brought back into our lives, you know, through the soil that ends up growing food or whatever else it might be. So I started there, but then I realized how great it was that my trash wasn't as smelly as it used to be. Like my trash bin is now doesn't smell because what goes in there is stuff that isn't food. So it can stay much longer in the bin versus, you know, before it was, I had to take it out every couple of days, otherwise the trash bin would get really smelly. So that's now the leading motivator for me to continue to compost.
I love that. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
And actually, that's part of my next question is, how did you stay inspired to pull the ship of change when it probably feels like sometimes the ship is anchored? But I mean, I guess you do, your community is full of people also trying to move the ship. So I bet that's really inspiring and beneficial.
Yeah, I think there's potentially some frustration, you know, from folks that may only have access to the news sources that cover when the Trump administration decides to pull out of the Paris Agreement. And I have the opportunity to read a lot of really amazing news that is not being provided by mainstream platforms, but is in more niche platforms that talk about how, despite that decision from the federal level, that there's so much amazing work happening at the local level, that whether it's states or cities and businesses, companies that may be very local and small to very big and like Fortune 500 companies. But there's little things that that kind of keep you motivated when it feels like the top down isn't supporting all of the middle and bottom up type of action. And that's just that progress continues to get made. The world sees the value in helping in driving to a more sustainable future. The big thing that hangs over, I think, my head, or what kind of worries me or keeps me up at night, is that the pace in which it's all moving, it doesn't seem to be fast enough. You know, despite all the really cool and amazing initiatives and companies that are, you know, taking trash out of the oceans and creating T-shirts from them, or, you know, doing other ways of repurposing waste that is toxic or that is, you know, hurting our planet, that there's still a lot happening around the world in different countries and geographies that is just going unchecked. And the rates of deforestation, these natural forests that will never get back, the communities, the animals, the water systems, everything in a pristine rainforest that once it's burnt into a crisp and cut down and turned into a cattle ranch or, you know, cattle grazing area, you know, that doesn't come back. So, you know, there's some sadness there. And it's, what's the tipping point is the big question that kind of looms over, you know, when will it actually get so bad that everybody's hand will be forced, all the government's hands will be forced, everybody will have to shift the way they they do things, we'll have to consume less. When will that happen? And it's potential that it will happen very soon. So that's what's sort of keeping me up at night.
Yeah. Wow. What's the source that you go to for that kind of information that you were saying isn't necessarily on the main news?
Yeah, I guess it depends on where your interests are. There's a really great part of the organization Forest Trends called Ecosystem Marketplace. The name may not be totally obvious, but the ecosystemmarketplace.com is an amazing platform for news about what's happening at the policy landscape, the international policy landscape, as well as various initiatives and domestic policies to tackle issues around financing nature and ensuring that we have the right economic systems in place to tackle these problems. Then there's some really great news coming out of other, you know, even Bloomberg is covering some fantastic stories around business and the finance sector and working towards sustainability. And then there's maybe more niche publications like Sustainable Brands. And so there's a real kind of variety of them out there. There's I would say I could go on. You know, the list is huge. But then I guess I could say, you know, it starts to get a little overwhelming because there's so much news. And you're like, well, how is this not getting picked up by the mainstream?
Yeah.
So there's a lot out there.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, sometimes I still wonder how people choose such a specific niche of, you know, of importance for them. So what do you think that brings you back to your childhood of what made you taking this route so imperative for your future? Because my question is, was it like a painful ping regarding this subject matter, or was it just like built up over time that you recognized you started having frustrations about the way of the world and how we're treating our environment?
I think actually it's a little bit different than that. You're on the track, but I actually, it was like in the early years for me, it was more about seeing the world and just being in awe with how beautiful it is. You know, it's such an incredible place, and we have such beautiful, you know, features, whether it's, you know, epic mountaintops or, you know, gorgeous surf, you know, ice caps or you know, glaciers or rainforests, you know, and then everything that exists within that, I think, is what I was kind of drawn to. It was more because of the beauty and the wonder of it all. And then when it actually got into working in space, it was because I thought it was really cool that we were able to use economic models and principles of sort of, you know, commodity markets to price what we're doing to the climate, you know, put a price on carbon and have companies be able to see what their impacts are through that price, and also be able to value activities that are happening on the ground to protect rainforests, to invest in renewable energy, to capture methane at landfills and turn that into, you know, energy that goes back into our energy systems. I mean, all of that stuff has it was really cool that we're able to put a price on carbon and then transact that, you know, in a market. So it was kind of this like, oh wow, we can really do this using business. And now it's for sure. I don't know if I have a choice, and I think pretty much everybody I know who works in the field, they're just motivated, amazingly talented, passionate people who probably couldn't do anything else because they know just how bad it's gotten and how much they want to do to try to be a part of the solutions.
Yeah, that makes sense. The world is so beautiful, and it's interesting because I feel like it takes traveling it a little bit in order to really recognize it, unless you live in an area that's just naturally beautiful. It's hard to really see it in a city.
Mm-hmm.
Did you grow up in the city? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Connecticut, you know, just on the Long Island Sound. So not too far. I was born in New York City, and New York City is, you know, home for me, and been here in Greenpoint for almost 10 years now, and this is also home.
Wow.
And yeah, to your point, I mean, it's challenging because technology and virtual reality and you know, films and being able to capture that beauty and of the world and kind of bring it to people in their own environment. It's getting better and better, but you know, I think probably all can agree there's nothing more like amazing than, you know, after the first several days when I had an opportunity to go to a rainforest for the first time, you start to see all the little things in that rainforest that you couldn't see before. You start to see the small little insects and ants that are kind of moving little pieces of leaf, you know, in a line that seems to extend forever because they have a purpose, they have a mission. Everything has its own kind of system of their own. They're all part of a system where they all have their own purpose. And that is really hard to emotionally, relay through some kind of medium like tech or you know, media. So yeah, I hear you on that. And that's, I think, why we've invested so much time and energy into producing these street art projects, because beauty should exist in our communities. And if what we have to work with are our buildings and you know, we can try to capture some of that space in areas that really needs some beauty, then an inspiration, then that's what kind of drives that. So totally in line with what you were just saying.
Yeah, definitely. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, because when you think about it, and yeah, nature is beautiful and the videos and pictures and everything like that is gorgeous, but there is that sense of when you're out in nature and you're looking out at a view, or you're in the forest or something, and you just recognize the depth of just how much bigger it is than you, you know? And because we were able to come up with all these technologies and all of that kind of stuff, we're able to knock it down, which is just such a shame. But it's more of a feeling, and it's like you're part of the beauty of the nature when you're out there, and less of like just experiencing it behind a screen,
mm-hmm.
which is still beautiful too. I mean, like planet Earth is an amazing creation.
Oh, amazing. Unbelievable. I mean, it's and then to think about the time it takes to get just one of those shots, one of those clips.
Yeah.
That one photographer, that team maybe had to wait 2 weeks just to capture that one scene of, a predator and a prey, having a battle.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it's tremendous what those features have done, and having had the opportunity to, you know, work on some projects where we've done filming, you know, and produce some videos. It takes a lot of work to bring that content together, but it's a thrill when you can be on the side of it where you're actually producing it too.
I bet. I think that would be such a fun job.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
One more question for you before we get into something like your wellness is the recycling system. This is just a personal question. What is the recycling system, and is there one? Like, when we're separating our recyclables from our trash, is that even being taken into consideration, or is everything just being thrown into the same place?
I'll see. I mean, this is an area where it starts to get sort of interesting, because and maybe I'll start by saying that what's always fun, being someone that works in the field of environment, climate, whatever you would want to call it, is that the assumption then is is that I know everything about everything, but I don't.
And, you don't?
And I'll be the first one to admit that I don't know everything about the waste industry. But, you know, what I will say, and this is sort of as, you know, an observer, because I really haven't worked directly in waste, is that we have a real challenge ahead of us. You know, that New York City has a 2030 goal of being zero waste. How many people even maybe know that? And how many? And it's not about that. It should be on the individual, the citizen of New York City, to know that. But why is that not being communicated to us more aggressively? Because we're about to hit 2020.
Yeah.
That leaves 10 years to get to zero waste. And does anybody know how we're going to get there? How can the consumer, how can the citizen of this amazing city take actions to contribute to that goal? And so that, I think, is kind of like fundamentally the challenge, is that we're not even aware of the goals and ambitions of our kind of local system. And then the reality is a lot of the landfills in the Northeast have been capped, and so waste has to be transferred, you know, far enough away where there's actually a landfill. So that happens by rail. And actually, it was really cool during Climate Week. We were sort of kind of supporting organization for an event that was hosted by the North Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce and Waste Management and the New York Rail system. And this was to actually board and take a short ride of a locomotive that Waste Management uses that is clean, is the cleanest burning type of locomotive out there for transferring, you know, these heavy, heavy waste containers that are on rail. And rail is a very efficient way of moving anything. Rail and waterways, the most efficient ways of moving product or moving things. So, you know, it was really cool to see that and to kind of learn about the things that those types of companies like Waste Management is doing to help the city of New York to achieve their goals while also having an enterprise where their goal is also to make money, you know, then to appease stakeholders and shareholders. But they're investing in these things, to these types of technologies and solutions, to help the waste, the whole system of the waste stream, to be more sustainable. So, but then to your question about the waste itself and you know, recycling, and you know, that's a bigger issue where, you know, as a country, and you know, and other countries did this too. We, you know, we used to ship our waste, and it was, we would pay for the shipping, you know, to other countries, and they would take it. And but that's slowing down, and we're not able to just offload our garbage and our recyclables. And as far as I understand it, we may not have the facilities in this country to process all those recyclables in the same way. And so it's a bigger question than I know how to answer. But I'd say, you know, it's worth digging into to actually be more on the side of how can I minimize what my individual footprint is on the waste stream. How can I reuse when you go to the deli, you go, you know, when you go to lunch and you're from your office, you know, why not bring that recyclable or that reusable container that maybe you got from takeout or you had delivered the night before to the place and have them put your sandwich in that container rather than creating a new container that then ends up in the trash. So, I mean, there's little things you can do to, even if you can't find all the answers to what happens to the waste, just knowing that actually I could just stop, you know, stop using a new container every time I go and get a sandwich, and maybe that will help in the end of the day.
Yeah, that's perfect. It's a perfect answer. Because sometimes I feel like we want to know the larger picture and know all the answers, but I mean, what are we going to do with that knowledge anyway? We may as well just always look back at the source, which is just us and what we do and our decisions that we make and how we live and our lifestyle choices. So that's cool. I like that you answered that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's important to, that's the last thing I'll say. It's important that we don't blame each other, you know, like we're not, nobody's bad. It's more just sort of understanding where these opportunities are for us individually to just take those little steps where it's like, well, if I can't really trust the system around me to do this well, or maybe I can, but I can't find out enough information about it. Well, maybe there's another solution. It's just sort of reducing consumption or reducing, you know, the inputs, you know, as an individual and, you know, solving it that way.
Completely. I like that. Is there a new perspective that you've decided to take on recently? And it doesn't even have to be about what we're talking about, but just in general.
Actually, yes. Yeah, really. It's a really good question. So I for my career and I, you know, let's continue. This is how I'll continue to be, is that I've really tried to be like a pragmatic individual, like trying to tackle these issues, you know. So how do we make it work for business? How do we make it work for government? We can't just expect that everything will change overnight and, you know, that we'll have completely transparent supply chains where we know that the commodities that are kind of entering into the food systems, going to McDonald's or when we're going to buy, you know, clothing or, you know, anything like I was talking about before with furniture, we can't expect that all to happen overnight. There's got to be a pathway and we have to engage and, you know, find the way to make it work. But I think the perspective that I've really begun to appreciate is just how passionate that the youth and the world are right now. And it's just really admirable to see how strong they are with not just kind of setting a course of we're going to be really loud about these issues because we care about the planet, we care about each other. And that's such a humbling message to kind of hear when maybe you don't have kids and you don't hear that, you know, from them and you're kind of hearing it from somebody else's kids and on a big stage. But and youth doesn't have to just be kids, you know, in an elementary school. It could be youth that are 20s, 30s. I mean, there's what's that definition? I mean, I don't know if I really have one, but I think that it's just really incredible to see that different tact of being really passionate, really aggressive about the messages and kind of using different systems of engagement to get those conversation points out there. That's been really helpful to see that, yeah, it's kind of reminds us we don't have a lot of time. You know, the pragmatists like me, we don't have endless time to work on the solution that works for everybody. It's kind of interesting to hear that and to think about, you know, could I change how I operate? Could I change what my perspectives are? Can I act differently in the work that I do and be more direct perhaps about, you know, what it is I'm trying to achieve? So I think that's kind of been a really, you know, amazing wake up call, you know, to everybody, those that weren't involved in this space, but also people that have been like me, and, you know, to see that there's this really incredible future versions of ourselves that care about this stuff in a way that I don't know if we've ever seen before.
Yeah, that's amazing. I just hope that somehow, somewhere they're incorporating this info into the schools. But I mean, kids are definitely getting educated on it somehow.
Well, they are, you know, and we really privileged to work in 2018 with a school in Williamsburg, Intermediate School 318, on two murals. And, you know, the school system, it's, you know, a very big city and a lot of schools. And so NYC schools, I give them a lot of credit for seeing the vision that we had for these walls and to use them as, you know, conversation points as I talked about with Principal Winley, it was about using this as a conversation starter for the kids. And this being the murals are talking about climate change through the lens of animals, through the lens of indigenous people, and it's just kind of really, really cool to see that there is some really awesome like administration and leadership at the schools in New York City who care so intensely about the future and care about the kids that they're willing to open up their walls and have opened up their walls to us to use them for murals. And we wouldn't have been able to do any of that, of course, without these amazing artists who we've worked with, Sunny, who did one of those murals in ASVP. ASVP is based in Brooklyn. Sunny's based in South Africa. And then the other local partners, but we like, Town Square and also the big organizations that were part of that, like UNICEF. You know, we had some really amazing opportunities to see that it actually, it is being brought into the schools and it's being brought onto the schools as well.
Perfect. That's exactly where it needs to go. I mean, if in 10 years they want to be, New York City wants to be zero waste, then the only way they're going to do that, I think, is educating the youth ASAP.
Yeah. And the youth are educating up. And that's the beauty of it. You know, when youth get, when they get educated and they're inspired, you know, they'll take that message home to their families and inform, the older generations. I mean, I think we have to be aware of the fact that, we have kind of social inequities around us that, are also a barrier. You know, it's not just about education and awareness. It's about the fact that maybe there are just some communities that are food deserts and, we don't have access to healthy food systems and, food options. And, I heard stories about kids that their breakfast is a can of Coke and bag potato chips. You know, that's not what a breakfast should be, but that's what A, maybe they can afford, and B, what, is available to them. I heard this really amazing story from another principal at an elementary school in Bed-Stuy, and we're talking with, about potentially doing a project together, and he's telling me how some of the kids that were there, they're kind of traveling for an hour and a half because they will go to a school because they get in and they really want to be there. But if they're maybe in transitional housing and they get moved to another, housing, complex, and then they still want to go to that school, they have to get there. And that's just one part of it. And another part of it is having, clean clothes. I mean, this principal ended up buying a washing machine and was washing some of the kids' clothes because, they were noticing that the new clothes that they had bought for some of the kids, they weren't wearing them, and it was because they were dirty. And so it's just, I think what the credit, needs to be given more to what the administration of these schools are doing above and beyond, what we're even aware of, to ensure that these kids have an opportunity for a future. And that's the starting point for a lot of them.
Yeah, that's amazing. I feel like I recognize that story, and it should be a story that's shared, and hopefully more schools and teachers and principals are doing that kind of stuff. I know the school system's a whole nother issue in itself, and I mean, I can't imagine so many kids and so many families and so many different socioeconomic people. Yeah, I mean, the school is the foundation of where these kids are gonna grow. And I love that. And I love that if you teach them there and you help them there, they do inspire. I mean, I love talking to a kid and just talking to a kid and their excitement and passion and for life, no matter how old they are, and the things that they have to say, that just like naturally heightens people, and your energy is like, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, like this little kid's so happy. He's having so much fun. And to be able to teach, and also all those videos of kids like talking about eating animals, and it's like, but if we all started off thinking that way when we were kids, but then we were just fed meats, but really we wanted to be vegans when we were kids, but we culturally grew up eating these things, and then that's how we end up not being vegans.
Yeah. Well, there's a huge push right now at the international level, like the UN system, about healthier food systems that are where it's not just about yield. It's not just about how much we can get from an acre of farmland or an acre of land. It's about how much of that can we get from that? How much yield can we get? But making sure that it's nutritious, that it's healthy, that the inputs were good and not kind of causing future issues. And I think that's something that in this country particularly, you know, we kind of have been focusing too much just on the yield side. And I'm not saying that it's an easy system, you know, food and making sure that we have enough to feed our growing population or our populations, that, you know, that's a whole challenge in and of itself. But, you know, I think we also want to make sure that that food is nutritious, that food is, has not been used with chemicals, and that we're, you know, giving our bellies, you know, and our bodies, you know, what it needs to be its best. So I think that's a bigger issue and bigger challenge, but it's very relevant today.
Totally. What are some examples of activities you do to enhance your well-being?
I mean, I think all of us have a connection between our mind and our bodies, and so much of that is about how we feel, and you know, feel physically relates to how we feel mentally and psychologically. There's so much that we can be putting into our bodies that doesn't help, and you know, is, you know, toxic, or whether, you know, it's alcohol, or, you know, nicotine and cigarettes, or, you know, the types of prescription medications. I mean, of course there are things that aren't good for our bodies, but I think for me, what I've really found in my whole life has been that when I'm actively working, you know, when I'm actively going to workout classes, or I'm actively running or cycling, that I'm happier. And I've started to realize that it's not only because of the fitness side, it's because of the interactions with the world around me. You know, when you're going for a run and you see, you know, people as you're kind of running by them, and you kind of see landscapes and how things are changing, and like that, those are inputs for me when I kind of think about the world around me. And then also when you go to a workout class and you have other people there with you, and it's like these are interactions that I think are outside of the day to day if you weren't going to do those. So I think, you know, I've kind of realized that it's both about like how that feels, you know, for the body, and that kind of relates to the mind. But there's something I hadn't considered before, which is the human to human connections and the connections you make with the world around you when you're out kind of being active. And then that drives you to wanting to eat better. And I think also, you know, for maybe one of the things that I've gotten to do more as I've gotten older is cook more. And I have a gluten intolerance, so I've really had to learn about the ingredients in the food that I'm consuming. Mm-hmm. And that's been challenging. You know, it was very challenging when I first found out almost, you know, I think it was 8 years ago. But it's been really what sort of helped me, though, is when I'm cooking and I know what's going into the food, because I've had to be very specific about it, that I can see the difference. And anyway, this is a bigger kind of issue around kind of gluten intolerance, but I'm able to eat, you know, bread and pasta in other countries and feel totally fine. And that's when I come here in the United States and I eat bread or pasta that's made here, and, you know, from produce, or from, you know, inputs from, wheat and other types of flours, that I feel it, you know, unless it's gluten free. So there's something bigger to the question around kind of the quality of the food that I observe because of that gluten intolerance.
Whoa.
Some people say it's preservatives that are being applied to the, you know, to the food. It's, some people say it's the Roundup, you know, weed killer that's used, you know, when growing wheat in the U.S. And others will say it's kind of how we clean the food. You know, maybe it's, we're using chemicals like chlorine or other things to clean our foods, and you know, that's a different process than how it's done in other countries. You know, where maybe they're cleaning it at every stage or keeping it sanitary at every stage in the cycle of getting it from ingredients to end product. So I don't know the answer. I mean, I've just heard from other people that they've had the same experience when traveling abroad.
Whoa, you need to travel more so you can indulge in some pasta.
I do love pasta, being half from Italian descent.
Who doesn't love pasta?
Exactly.
Is there a daily or weekly habit that you have that is a non-negotiable? A
daily or weekly habit? Sleep, for sure. I mean, it's hard to get sometimes when there's a lot going on, but sleep is a non-negotiable. Fitness, as I mentioned, are non-negotiables. That needs to happen on a regular basis. I think something that's maybe more specific to me is just making sure I'm staying on top of what's happening, you know, around sustainability and climate policy, that I'm staying in the loop on it. It's so important that I do, and that I keep learning and I keep finding out about new things that I can, you know, kind of digest and you know, apply to what I'm doing. And I just am constantly on the hunt for data, for input to make myself better and to think, you know, to be the best version of myself, I guess, is, you know, it's what I'm always, you know, looking to do.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you for being part of the sustainable mission, because we need it. We need you.
Yeah, thank you.
What is it you do that helps you through current challenges that you didn't necessarily have in your toolbox 5 years ago?
I guess it's the ability to kind of take a step back, or to, you know, not be so reactive to things, to kind of take some pause and, you know, think them through and then respond. And at the same time, have some more confidence in my decisions or what, you know, kind of what I'm thinking. I think that just kind of comes with, you know, as you kind of work more and you fail. Yeah. Like, the more you fail, the more that you kind of have opportunities to, you know, realize that you goofed up on something, or that you didn't do something correctly, or maybe you didn't get this new project because of, you know, something that you were able to identify you did, and kind of owning up to that. And I mean, just constantly, like I said, learning, and that kind of drives to a point of getting, you know, more sure of yourself and of decisions and of intuition, I think is something I'm grateful to have today that I didn't have as much of, you know, 5 years ago.
Neat. Yeah, that's important. I love trying to, it's like an ever changing, ever growing, constant practice of just like managing our reactions. Mm-hmm. I've recently, I feel like, also started getting into that, and it's not easy. It's no easy feat, but it's definitely worth it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if somebody were to put their hand up at any age and say they've got it all figured out, I'd be really impressed. So we've got to be humble enough to know that we're still going to get things wrong. Even, you know, when you get a little bit older, you start getting 5 years into having a company, or you're doing X, Y, and Z, it's inevitable. You're gonna make mistakes.
Totally. I think I would be more skeptical than impressed.
Yeah.
I'd be like,
I don't know about that.
Yeah. What do you do for fun with your off time?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm a pretty basic guy. I think I love dorking around with computers or technology and drones once in a while, and that's kind of cool. And I love movies, I love music, I love going to concerts. Me and my girlfriend go constantly, just to experience different things. So it's fun just to do that. It's also we live in New York City, so taking advantage of what's around us is it's not really that hard to be in the middle of some of the most amazing things going on right now. So I think just this is a pretty kind of generic response of music, movies, being active, fitness, and being a part of the community.
Yeah, no, I think that's perfect. Lastly, is there anything you wish we spoke about, something I didn't ask, or something intuitive that you'd like to share?
Maybe a little bit about the work that we do, and I think the key message that I don't know if I really relayed was that the work we do is not possible without working with other people and other organizations. So, whether, like I mentioned, New York City schools or big organizations at the UN level to smaller organizations that might, not have the international stage, but are very strong here in the community, like the North Brooklyn Chamber, like the Newtown Creek Alliance, and the businesses that we've had a chance to work with, our first project in Greenpoint was Transmitter Park, and we worked with this amazing artist team, Fail, that actually was based here. Their studio was on Green Street, and they joined up to the project and did this beautiful mural, on the theme of climate change and climate hope. Is kind of actually it's called Love Me, Love Me Not, and the plucking of those petals off the daisy, and whether or not we love the earth enough to do what's right, to take care of it. It's just really powerful, because when you look at that mural, you don't actually know it's about climate change. So that it's been really cool to work with the businesses like that have provided us those walls, as well as the Parks Department, as well as the artists. And and really importantly, this is not a plug. It's, we feel really grateful that people like Assemblyman Lentil has been so supportive of our work. And before we started doing these projects, I'll admit, I didn't really know what an assemblyman did or assembly person did. And now I do. And what they do is they support what's best for the community. And time and time again, Assemblyman Lentil has been there to support us and help us along the way, and help us announce the murals once they're done. And so that's really powerful. And Councilman Levin's office has been involved as well. So it's sort of really been a fun, amazing experience seeing how, as a community here in North Brooklyn, that we do get support from a lot of different types of people and organizations and individuals, that are outside of those organizations that just come to help. So, there's a laundry list of names. If I were, receiving an Oscar, that I would never have time to list off. It's really amazing. I love this community.
That's so good to hear. And it's so nice to hear that political people in power are helping.
Mm-hmm. They do. Absolutely.
Amazing. And where can we find you and what you're working on out there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, best way is, on our social channels, on Instagram and Twitter. Probably the best ways. And, we're on Instagram as Greenpoint Innovations, and on Twitter it's GPT Innovations. But our website, we try to keep that up to date. We have a Vimeo page with all of our videos. It's just vimeo.com/Greenpoint Innovations. So it's all sort of on the web, I guess. So, but anyone should feel free to get in touch if there's anything that they're worried about or have questions about or interested in maybe, you know, working on things together, to send us an email to info@greenpointinnovations.com.
Amazing, Stephen. Thank you so much for your time tonight. I really appreciate you working with me getting on here, and I hope to keep seeing what you're doing and watching it grow and morph and hopefully help you out sometime with something if I can.
No, you already have. This is an amazing podcast. Thank you so much for having me on, and really excited for you and for the podcast, and really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that is a wrap, folks. Thank you, as always, for tuning in and listening. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you did, you know where to find Stephen, Instagram, Twitter, Vimeo, and you know where to find me on Instagram as well at Spiritually Nutritious, or you can email me wellandwhy@gmail.com. That's wellandwhy@gmail.com. Let me know what you think. If you have any questions or concerns, he already said you can reach out, which is pretty damn cool. And I want to hear what you guys have to say. I want to know what people do. What do you do to keep your carbon footprint down in your home or at work? I know I try to do what I can, but I also try not to get too angry when I don't do it all right all the time, because that's not healthy either. But at the end of the day, the point is, do your damned best, okay? It's easy, okay? I'm so tired, guys. It's 11:45 p.m. on Wednesday, November 20th. This episode's coming out tomorrow, Thursday, November 21st. And yesterday was my birthday. So I'm 28 years old, so that's that. Getting older by the minute. You know, you're never going to be younger than you are right now, so enjoy it. Somebody said that not too long ago, but I really liked that. You can complain all day about how old you are, but you're never going to be younger than right now. And now. Alright, I'm so tired. If you can't hear it in my voice or my energy, sorry. Oh no. My mom's going to get bored. Thanks for coming in last night for dinner, Mom. Guys, my mom drove all the way to New York City just to eat dinner with me on my birthday. That's amazing. Shout out to you, Mom. I don't know where you come up with this energy, but you surprise me. You surprise me all the time with your energy levels. And that's it for now, I think. Ta-ta for now.